First of all, congrats on the film. It is such a fun film to watch. Does it
Thank you so
feel.
much. Yeah, that was the hope. Something that you like, a fun time at the cinema.
Does it feel really good having it out in the world?
I mean, yes, it feels good. It's a whole mix of feelings. It's all quite surreal. Do you know what I mean? It kind of
I
feels
know
like
exactly what you
someone
mean.
else's life. I'm watching it, you know?
I, of course, have to ask you about the unicorns. I know that you did a lot of
Sure.
research and that you found that the story of unicorns was always the same throughout history, which I found really fascinating. I imagine there would have been a sense of needing to stay true to the tale, but also wanting to make it unique and subvert it. How did you find balancing those two things?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think to the point of like the unicorn stories have always kind of been the same. Yeah, it's something that I discovered early in the research. It's Jorge Luis Borges has this great book, The Book of Imaginary Beings, which is just kind of like a compendium of different mythical creatures. So it's a short chapter on unicorns, but he has this great quote that the first unicorn story is almost identical to the latest. We have these associations with unicorns of like very like Lisa Frank, white pony in a field. And when I started doing research, I realized that wasn't what it was. And yet the fun became a question of, well, how do I subvert those expectations and yet still somehow satisfy them in indirect ways? What I found that was interesting is that, even though most people haven't done like deep dives into unicorn mythology, because they've been so consistent, because unicorns have kind of always represented, the untamed nature. They've always represented the unattainable, the thing that humanity doesn't deserve and will always seek. Because of that, and because of we've always known them to be very prized, we've known people always want to hunt unicorns. And what's interesting is because those stories have been around for so long, I think audiences kind of have a certain, like through osmosis almost, we almost have like a
Of
passive
course, yeah.
understanding of this lore. And that kind of was a really interesting framework to start from. I think first and foremost, I knew the movie needed to function as a creature feature. It also needed to function as a recontextualization of unicorn lore. But that was kind of easy to align those because, like I said, for most of our history of unicorns as a mythological creature, they were more aligned with a creature feature or a monster movie or this sense of like, I think Jenna's character, I know Jenna's character refers to them as divine monsters at some point in the movie. And so I definitely started thinking about them in that context as like these kind of old world ancient gods and like the kind of like Princess Mononoke kind of way. And so that was kind of conducive to that. I think the challenge became like, how do I then satisfy the emotional component that maybe is more recent from that last 50, 75 years of like the white unicorn and the rainbows and stuff. And that was an interesting game, like how to play telephone with the past of like, oh, we associate rainbows with them, so maybe their blood had a certain opalescence to it, that sort of thing.
And I know that when you were creating the unicorns, they've got such different looks throughout the film when they're more beastly and things. There was lots of blending of animals that you used to create something that was maybe less aligned with this white unicorn figure that we know of.
Yeah.
What I'm curious about is the unicorn sound. Was that something else that you thought about, and did you blend a bunch of other beasts in to kind of give it an extra oomph, or what did you use
Yeah.
to create that?
Well, our sound designer Damien Volpe is a genius. He's really brilliant. And he did an exceptional job of just kind of building this library of creature sounds that, depending on how they're communicating, there's different animals blended together. He kind of came up with this realization that if we had a horse sound somewhere in each of the sounds, you'd believe it. But then otherwise, there's a lot of lion roars are in there. A lot of there's like a bird that's like a kind of like in the mare. The stallion had some baby elephant in him. We did a lot of elk calls, like Wapiti elk, have these very long distances. They have this kind of like it almost sounds like a cry. Like we were talking about whale sounds a lot and whale calls and how those feel like notes that kind of extend great distances. Honestly, it became a really fun thing of Damien kind of building all these different sounds. And then for some of the vocalizations, he used this software that was so cool where he built these sounds and built the kind of palette of the creature. And then sometimes he would talk into his mic, and then the software would kind of apply what he was saying and then the sounds he was making with his own voice. filter it through these kind of library of sounds that he'd kind of compiled together. It's one of those things. I could have sound mixed this movie for a year. It would have been so much fun.
You spoke a little bit about, obviously, creature features. There's a lot of references in this film. Alien, Jurassic Park. I was wondering if the character Ridley is a direct reference to Ridley Scott, and if that was something you built the character Ridley around. Is there any Ripley in there being a final girl up against creatures?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, there was, it's hard when you make a movie about unicorns and there's like a monster movie. Like, I'm a huge Alien fan, but obviously I also watched Legend a bunch when thinking about this movie. And famously he took that footage, some of that unicorn footage from Legend, and used it in, what is it, the director's cut of Blade Runner, right? For Deckard's dreams of the unicorn running. So, all that to say, it was definitely an intentional Ridley Scott reference or homage, or I don't know, honorific, I suppose. I certainly was conscious of the fact that, like, I like I said, I love Alien. Sigourney Weaver's character Ripley, it does function in the same way as Ridley, in the sense that, like, if everyone listened to her at the beginning of the movie, none of this would happen. And so there is something about that I thought about that character a lot, because she's just Ripley as a character is just right the whole time. She's never really wrong about anything. And yeah, so Jenna with Ridley, I was certainly thinking about that. This character who's right and who no one's listening to. And I think what was interesting, what I always thought was an interesting place to come from with that, was to make it generational. That she's the youngest person, that she has a value structure that's different than the rest of these characters. And because of that, she's easily dismissed as naive or inexperienced or idealistic. And yet, she's the only one who actually has any understanding of the situation they're in.
Absolutely. It plays into this class commentary that this film provides. I've seen a few reviews that speak to kind of like the big cheers in the audience when some of the maybe more greedy characters meet their end. I wanted to talk about the sense of like catharsis as an audience to see the downfall of these characters, because you don't see it so much in real life.
Yeah, I mean, that was always, it's I don't know, we live in unsubtle times. As an American, it's like the world's wealthiest man, the wealthiest person in the history of anything, is like, has an office with the in the White House. It's like, what an unsubtle thing, like how nakedly corrupt. And so yeah, I don't know, there was certainly, in the same way that it's escapist and it's cool to think about, like, oh, unicorns being real, it's also cool to imagine perhaps, hopefully not equally unlikely, scenario of a sense of social justice being served, or larger justice, perhaps, I don't know, cosmic justice. So yeah, I don't know, the catharsis element of having this comeuppance in a very straightforward, plain and simple kind of way was always part of the DNA of the movie, because it was always this, it always had this satirical angle in my mind. It always was this kind of class commentary, or commentary on really the capitalist structure, I hope.
So I'll just ask you one last
Sure.
question. After making this film, doing all this research, would you drink a unicorn blood cocktail?
Of course not. It'd be terrible. I mean, it's clearly a bad thing. It would lead to something bad. Would I be tempted? Yeah. Might I take a sip? I guess, is that the same thing? Is that
That's the
trying a
same.
cocktail?
Yeah, I
That's
guess
am I
so.
saying I'm saying, man, I would say, I have to say no, because I know better. But goddamn, I'd be tempted. That's
The
the
way I
hope.
see it is this, it can still live
Right, it could
with a
bleed a
bit of
little bit
blood.
and still be fine. Would it? Would they hold that grudge? Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, if it was just like a little nick, like a paper cut, sometimes you cut your finger and you just want to, yeah. Then I'm sounding like a Nosferatu, they like cut like,
So maybe.
yeah, so maybe. I don't
So
know.
maybe.
Yeah.
Depends.
If I could
Depends on
talk
the
it out
finger.
with the unicorn and say, like, this is cool, right? This isn't like a big deal to you. If it is, I don't want to. I don't want to impose. I don't know what the social graces are. Is it a faux pas? It's probably a faux pas.
It's
Probably
probably a
faux
faux
pas.
pas.
Yeah, I want to be invited to another unicorn dinner party, and so I'll be on my best behavior.
All right. Thank you so much, and congrats on the film again.
Thanks,
And I
Alan.
hope
Appreciate it.
you have a great time delivering it to the world.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope the world has a great time receiving.